So, this morning, we've just come off about, 10 days or 2 weeks of major cultural stress in our society. I don't know how many of you have completely abstained from watching the Kavanaugh hearings at all, or listening to them on the radio at all. One person has. But most of us have not. Both sides, pretty fervent. And most of us are on the same side, but not all of us, and the other side is equally fervent. So that's what's going on. And I think what we need to pay attention to is, one of the things we need to pay attention to is investing all our energy in being against. Mother Teresa said, I put this in your program, I was once asked why I don't participate in anti-war demonstrations. And I said that I will never do that, but as soon as you have a pro-peace rally, I'll be there. So when we're against, when we feel threatened, we get fired up. We get fired up. It jump-starts us. And anger can be healthy. It's not, it can be healthy. In my own case, I've talked many times about anger, about how my brother was treated in a locked ward in a psych hospital before he killed himself, and how that anger propelled me to try to do stuff to create alternatives in the community to locking people up who had mental health issues and chemical dependency issues at the same time. But staying in anger is not healthy, and it's ineffective. So being against has its limitations, and I want to suggest 5 limitations to being against. When we're against, the path forward is fuzzy. I'm afraid. Let's say I'm having problems at work, and I don't want to get fired. What do I do? I don't want to get fired. I avoid running into the boss. I go down a different hallway. I show up when he's not there. I keep my head down. Maybe I don't offer ideas to him or her, but mostly I've had hims. So that freezes us. That freezes us. But what if we pause to figure out, what can we do to be a valued employee? Can we get clear about what we can do that's not against, that opens us up a little bit? There's more for? So being against has its limitations, and one of them is that the path forward is fuzzy. The path forward is fuzzy. Something is happening that we don't want. We may not be able to resolve the entire issue, but are there positive actions we could take? Positive actions that are being taken as a result of the Me Too movement and Kavanaugh is more women are running for office. Well, that's being for. That's running for office. It's being for. So if we're just against, the path forward is fuzzy. Number one. Number two, in case you haven't noticed, being against is not sustainable. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. If we're just moving away from the pain of what we don't want, we tire ourselves out. Then the pain wavers. Maybe it goes away and we take a breath and we just sort of don't do anything. Then it comes back, and we cringe again. We hold ourselves in again. So, if much as possible, if we could focus on what we care about and how much we want to change things for the better, our motivation stays steady, right? Stays steady. The path forward is fuzzy. When we're just against, it's not sustainable. And it doesn't inform our unconscious mind. My last talk was about the unconscious mind. I'm going to teach a course in 2019 on the unconscious mind here. So what about the unconscious mind? The unconscious mind communicates through images. Remember, the unconscious mind does not have verbal capacity. It communicates through images. So it has trouble processing the negative. I don't want to be broke. That's how I used to feel. I don't want to be broke. The unconscious mind creates the image of broke. If I haven't given a clear picture of what I want, it has to figure out what not broke might look like. But actually, it doesn't. That's not the way it is. It's an image-making mind, the unconscious. It's image-making. So if I think and talk about not being broke, that I keep broke alive. I keep broke alive. So we had an initiation ceremony here late yesterday afternoon, and three people got initiated. At least two are here today. Oh, at least three are here. Oh, all three are here today. They got initiated last night, and they were given Buddhist names. And I've been giving people Buddhist names for 16 years. I was not initiator, so I did not give names. But I thought their names were cool. They got cool names. I always wanted to give cool names too. But so early on, when I initiated someone, I gave him a name. I don't remember if it was in Sanskrit or Japanese. Sometimes I do Sanskrit. Sometimes I do Chinese. But I gave him a name. And I pulled it right out of the book of names. Now I just do whatever I want to, but in those days I used the book of names. And I pulled out freedom from fear. So I gave him the name, freedom from fear. Well, he perseverated about that name for about a year to 2 years. The fear, it had fear in it. And he was not happy. Well, I kept saying, this is from the Sanskrit. You know, it's freedom from fear. But his unconscious, it was about fear. He told me about his fear. And here I gave him a name that reinforced his fear. So after that, I didn't give any names like that anymore. Since then, for the last 15 years, I've only given positive names that the unconscious can take in. Right? That don't confuse the poor unconscious. We have to get the unconscious on board. Occupies a lot of our lives. A lot of our lives. If we get it on board, it'll help us. It's part of who we are. So instead of what we don't like, what we like, what we would like, can we allow ourselves to just relax in and let our unconscious generate ideas? I don't know how to create what I want, but if I did, what might that be? Where could I start? Don't know mind. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Big mind, expansive mind. I don't know. But out of that, some dim vision comes up. I know it doesn't come up the way you'd like it to, and it's so dim you can't, but it comes up. Some dim vision, some vague vision, and that's good. Picture of what you'd like. Picture of what you want to move into, how you want to be. Trust your unconscious. So being against, the path forward is fuzzy. It's not sustainable. It doesn't inform your unconscious mind. And finally, it's tough on the body. Anybody ever notice that? It's tough on the body. When we're focused on what we hate, what we fear, what makes us angry, we're stressed out. Our jaws clench, our heart pounds, or maybe they're just some general higher blood pressure or stress in different joints that we don't even know where it comes from. Preparing ourselves for fight or flight. So when we focus on what we don't want constantly, stress becomes chronic. Chronic anxiety, chronic depression. So focusing as much as possible on what we want, what we deeply care about, what we deeply is in, what is in our heart, what we want to manifest. So in 1967, that was, some of you, not very many of you old enough to remember this, but some of you, well, you heard about it from your parents. It was the Vietnam War. It was raging. And I was on a college campus, and I was raging. Raging against it. By that time, I'd been protesting against it for probably 2 years. And Hubert Humphrey came to my college, and he was, we considered him Lyndon Johnson's lapdog for the war. And so he came to speak, and there was a group of us who were really angry. And there he was sitting in front saying all these sweet sentimental things while he was supporting the war. So afterwards, you've heard me say this, those of you who heard me tell this story 5 times by now.
Three.
So we chased him. We didn't plan on chasing him. I don't know. I was just going, but we were so pissed. We chased him. Well, we didn't get far because of the security force around him. But we chased him. And I've been practicing meditation. I've been practicing Zazen already for 3 years when I chased him. It just happened. I was so against, you know, anger just took over. I don't know if we'd caught him, what we would have done with him. That would have been interesting. We were so unarmed, we just had our flip-flops, we just got, being against. Then after that, I was kind of, and I felt a little embarrassed. Embarrassed in front of Buddha and my teacher, and, you know, they didn't know about it. I just felt embarrassed. I thought, oh, I've been practicing every day, meditation for 3 years, and look at me. Look at me. So then, move forward to 2008. 2008, what war was that? Anybody remember what that war was? Iraq. It was the Iraq War. We had the Republican Convention here in St. Paul. Anybody remember that? 10 years ago? So my son and I decided we were going to march to the Capitol as part of the peace march. March to the Capitol. So I've been practicing for a few more years, 1967 to 2008, a few more years of practice, right? And when I went to that march, I'd just been teaching a class here on the paramitas. The paramitas, they're the gone beyonds, gone beyond the duality of either or, self or other, also referred to as the perfections. So I was in that march then, and I just was, and we've been practicing, I had them practice, so I had to practice too, you know. You have your student practice and you don't practice yourself, it's not so good. Well, I was practicing the perfections. And so while we were marching, and if I had start to get a little bit, feel a little unsettled, although I didn't really feel very unsettled, I just felt good mostly. But to even feel better, I did deep on the in-breath and peace on the out-breath. Deep on the in-breath and peace on the out-breath. That's the equanimity paramita. And that was cool. That was wonderful. Then at some point, I'm not sure what happened, but we saw this phalanx, it looked like, of soldiers approaching us with these big shields and these big, this armor. And, you know, that's when they started armoring the police. Police didn't used to be armored, but somehow from the Defense Department or somewhere, the police, local police departments have gotten all this armor. So the police were all armored. So they didn't look like real people. You couldn't, in the old days, in the old protests, you'd see in their eyes, you'd see, but you couldn't tell. They weren't like, and there was a phalanx. And I wasn't sure exactly. It seemed like they were coming for us, toward us, but I didn't know why, because we were right peacefully marching. But I got scared. So then I saw that the peace paramita wasn't working. So then I thought, oh, I'll do the loving kindness paramita. But that didn't work either. I tried finding loving kindness in my heart, and I only thought, I won't get into, I thought profanity. I won't say what it was. Those, da 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 da. You know, here we are being peaceful, and they're da 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 da. So then I couldn't do that paramita. So then I thought, oh, the generosity paramita. I've been teaching that. So I was able to just see them as scared human beings, generous, as human beings who had families, who were trying to feel safe, just like us. And the generosity paramita worked. So I was able to get my composure back and go back to being peace. And then the phalanx turned like one unit. And they didn't block us anymore. But afterwards, I wrote a note to my friend who was friends with the mayor and said, "Tell the mayor about this. This really freaked it all. Freaked all of us out. This is no way to welcome us to St. Paul when we're just marching peacefully." So we've just finished 10 days free from violence. And I didn't go to any of the classes or the workshops, but I heard there were good ones. Some people really thought they were good ones, so that's cool. I'm just really glad to hear that. I only have one criticism of the 10 days free from violence. Not so good for the unconscious. How about 10 days of cultivating peace? Better for the unconscious. Healthier for the unconscious. The unconscious doesn't know. Doesn't know. It just sees violence. Oh. Oh. So now I'd like to do a little practice with you guys. So I'm going to do a little practice of against and of before with you. And if you'd like to join me, join me. If you don't want to, then don't join me. But get in a comfortable position that you can sit in for 5 minutes. And take two or three deep breaths. And then when you're ready, let your breath resume to its normal rhythm and just follow your breath. And if you'd like to, let an issue come into your mind that frightens you or makes you anxious. Spend a few moments thinking about everything that is wrong and horrible about that issue. spend a few minutes thinking about everything that is wrong and horrible about that issue. And when you're ready, scan your body. How does it feel as you focus on what is wrong or horrible? How does it feel in your forehead, in your jaws, in your shoulder, in your neck, in your stomach? Just be with that, with attention, with non-judgmental attention. Just be with that. Now, when you're ready, let that go and take two or three more deep, refreshing breaths. Breathing in cool, fresh air and letting go of any stress and tension that you don't need on the out-breath. And when you're ready, think about what you would like instead of that thing that you identified a moment ago, a few moments ago. What would you like instead? What can you be? What would you like to be in regard to this issue? What would that look like? What would that feel like? What would you like to be? What would that look like? What would that feel like? How can you alter the image that was not so positive so you feel good? Altering it so you can feel good. Any adjustment that you need so you can feel good. Now, when you're ready, check in with your body again. How does it feel as you focus on what you would like? How does it feel in your forehead, in your jaws, in your neck, in your shoulders, in your abdomen? Just be with that and appreciate that. And when you're ready, take another breath or two and come back to the room. When you're ready, take a breath or two and come back to the room. You may have noticed how much more powerful it feels when we're moving towards something positive, when we're being for something. So that's part one of my talk. Part two of my talk is, this is an important kind of practice, but how can we do this and be authentic? Because if Zen is about anything, it's about authenticity. Authenticity. I couldn't authentically evoke the loving kindness toward those soldiers who were actually policemen, scared policemen. I couldn't evoke that. So I had to do something else authentic. And I was able to draw on generosity, but maybe I couldn't have even drawn on that. Albert Einstein says, whoever is careless with the truth in small matters cannot be trusted with important matters. So here are some definitions from the dictionary of things that are kind of like truth but aren't really true, aren't really authentic. The first is truthiness. Truthiness. The quality of seeming or being felt to be true, even if not necessarily true. Truthiness. Here's another one, which you've been hearing a lot lately. Alternative truth. Alternative truth. How many times have you heard that? An ideological grouping associated with extreme conservative or reactionary viewpoints, characterized by a rejection of mainstream politics and by the use of online media to disseminate deliberately controversial content. Third, post-truth. Post-truth, related to or denoting circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to the emotion and personal belief. So those are all kind of things that are almost true, but actually are totally not true. Totally not true. They're not authentic. They're not genuine. We've been taught, we've been acculturated to protect ourselves by not being truthful or openly honest. That's how we hold back parts to protect ourselves. We withhold our true thoughts and feelings so we don't rock the boat. We pretend to agree to avoid conflict. How many times have someone said to you, what's wrong? And you've said nothing. Well, inside, ugh. How many times has, well, maybe this hasn't happened to you, but it used to happen to me all the time, has a peer at work or a boss said to you, do you mind staying late to finish that project? And I say, no problem. Well, no problem. I know how to do Zazen. I can just let it go. No problem. But there is a problem because I'm actually really tired and feeling overworked. I feel burnt out. So authentic means showing up as we really are as individuals. The more we are who we are, the more we feel connected with everything else. The more we feel aligned, the more we feel at peace. If you don't know the answer, how about saying that you don't know? If the truth you need to speak is difficult, take a few moments, then speak. Take a deep breath and then do it. Or maybe take a whole day and then do it. How can you say it authentically? How can you say it assertively? I used to teach 25 years ago, assertiveness training. So here are five things I taught in assertiveness training. Number one, speak to the point. That's assertive behavior. Passive behavior agrees with others despite feelings. Aggressive behavior only considers own feelings and or the demands of others. Number two, assertive behavior values the self equal to others. That's a core teaching of Buddhism. Values the self equal to others. That's the Avatamsaka Sutra. That's Huayan. That's branching streams flow in the darkness. When in difference, there is oneness. Within oneness, there is difference. Number three, assertive behavior tries to hurt no one, including the self. Passive behavior hurts the self to avoid hurting others. Aggressive behavior hurts others to avoid being hurt. Number four, assertive behavior reaches goals without alienating others. Passive behavior does not reach goals and may not know goals. Aggressive behavior reaches goals but hurts others in the process. So assertive behavior, reaching goals without alienating others. A goal that we have here at Zen Center, which most of you know about, is to do a capital campaign to raise a whole bunch of money to really take care of this building for the next 20 years because it needs a lot of support. And we're going to have to ask a lot of people for money. We're going to have to ask people for a lot of money. Ooh. Can we do that assertively? I think so. I think so. But it takes, you have to take a risk, and it takes some practice. Finally, assertive behavior. You're okay, I'm okay. You're okay, I'm okay. Passive behavior. You're okay, but I'm not okay. Or I'm okay, but you ain't okay. Assertive behavior. You're okay, I'm okay. It's what my teacher called things as it is. Things as it is. You're okay, I'm okay. Expressing ourselves authentically gives us some freedom. We no longer waste time hiding or pretending to be who we aren't, who we should be, who we'd like to be. We don't have hidden agendas or ulterior motives. We feel more connected to each other. Our relationships are deeper. We're not hiding behind a veneer anymore. The veneer of religiosity, whether it be Catholicism or Buddhism or Protestantism, the veneer of religiosity. And we're practicing. We're practicing what we've learned. The paramitas or other practices. Buddhism is full of practices that help us tap into a more positive aspect of being. Equanimity, loving kindness, generosity, patience, moral behavior. So it's good for us to pay attention to how we feel when we act or speak. Do we feel good and whole? Sometimes we need to pause to find our most genuine response. We are the Jiriki school of Buddhism, the self-power school of Buddhism. Ji means self, Riki means power. We are the self-power school of Buddhism. As the self-power school of Buddhism, we don't skip working on deep issues. We don't skip working on deep issues. We practice our meditation. We practice getting the teaching in us. Getting the teaching in us. It's already in us, but we have to sort of unveil it to find it. In my two books, I talk about accepting what is, but being careful of faking it to be well thought of. Do my actions reflect my words, my thoughts, and what I most deeply care about? Pretty important. Pretty important. But it's a practice. We have to practice it over and over and over again. And we can practice it with patience, which is one of the paramitas, and with generosity to ourselves, because we'll screw up some. That's okay. No big deal. No big deal. So I've been guiding teacher here for quite a while, and before that I was CEO of a nonprofit for quite a while. Before that I was CEO of another nonprofit for quite a while, and before that I was a supervisor for quite a while, and before that I was a mental health worker and a county social worker for quite a while. See, I'm old. I'm old. But I remember when I got my first supervisory job, first job as a supervisor, and I began, all of a sudden, I was supervising people who had been my peers. Yikes! Yikes! They've been my peers. I wanted them to still like me and value me. How could they still like me and value me? Especially now that they're acting out. They have to do what I say. So, because I wanted to be liked and valued, I let them get away with a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff, and try to practice forgiveness when I wasn't feeling forgiving at all, and they kept doing the same thing over and over again. But then my friend said to me, forgiveness, is that really how you feel about so-and-so? You see how she's acting out continually, challenging you on everything and polluting the atmosphere? Do you really want to forgive her? And I I thought about it. I sat with it, and I said, no, I need to. Well, I'll change it to a man now. I don't remember whether it was a man or a woman. I'm going to fire him so he doesn't pollute my whole team. So I fired him. I had to do that. Sometimes we have to do that kind of thing. So to manifest what we call big mind, big self, small self needs to act, needs to engage. We can go to dozens of seminars and trainings and personal growth and read lots of self-help books, take all these classes on Buddhist teaching, but we need to act. We need to do meditation and we need to act using the paramitas or some other means of support. Unless we take risks and choose to act, we're never fully alive, right? We never tap into this power that we have, power of all life that's coursing through us. Dogen says engaged activity is the way we live our interdependence. The way does not precede engaged activity. We bring the way alive by acting now. Finally, he says, engaged activity sustains me and sustains others. So, as much as possible, emphasizing the positive while acting authentically, so that we can move through, pass through the limitations of the small little self and the unconscious into what Suzuki Roshi calls big mind. The mind, the self, that includes all life. Wow, that includes all life. And we can do that by this practice. Sometimes we may feel that only for a second, but that's okay. A second is also eternity. So that's what I want to say this morning. And I'll be glad to entertain questions or comments. Yeah.
Wait a second to give your thoughts about. Okay, I've been knocked out in bar fights a lot.
You've been knocked out in bar fights a lot, okay.
But anyways, the difference between being unconscious there and unconscious, my unconscious now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one's an aware unconscious now, and one's not an aware unconscious.
That's right.
But then if one's an aware unconscious, then it's really not unconscious. Then
well, that's right. So a lot of Buddhist practice and a lot of Western psychological practice, but specifically I'm talking as a Buddhist teacher now, is bringing stuff from the unconscious into consciousness. We have something called the storehouse conscious, which is the unconscious, and it contains all our memories and our thoughts and our projections, and those dominate our lives. But through a sitting practice and through these other kinds of practice, we begin to bring it into the conscious mind and then let it dissipate. If we don't bring it into the conscious mind, it will never dissipate. It will just so... that's not like getting knocked out in a bar fight. Because when you're knocked out in a bar fight, you don't have a chance to learn anything. Well, maybe you do learn. I don't know. Maybe you learn to hit harder and earlier next time. Aggressive behavior. Or maybe not to hit at all. Instead be assertive. I don't know. Anyway, good question. Yeah, starting in the back.
Could you state again the five things that being negative, being against?
The five things that what?
Being against the bad things that being against.
I can't hear you.
You started off saying five things about being anti-something.
That yeah, okay, the five things about being anti-something are... path forward is fuzzy. It's fuzzy, you know. When we're against something, we're usually confused. We don't know what direction we're going in. It's not sustainable. We exhaust ourselves by being against something. And then when the threat fades away, we're okay. We just la, la, la. Then it comes back and we exhaust her. So it's not sustainable. Number three, it doesn't inform our unconscious mind. Because the unconscious doesn't have an image. And then number four, have to look it up here. number four. Anybody remember number four?
Tough on the body.
What? Tough on the body. That's a really important one. Maybe that's the most important one. It's really tough on the body.
And you didn't get five.
Were there five? I don't know. Let's see. I have to find my notes. Yeah, no, they're just four. It's tough on the body. Yeah. But that's enough, isn't it?
I thought I had missed one.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The exercise you had us do, I thought was very helpful and powerful. My question is, there seems to be a danger of trying to push the negative thought away.
Yeah.
And replace it with the positive thought. And
yeah.
So that's not the intention. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do you know when you're usefully replacing the negative with the positive versus unhelpfully?
Yes. Could you guys hear him? Yeah. Don't push the negative away. The negative is telling you something about your woundedness, something about your fears. Don't push it away. Open up to it. It's something about your vulnerability, about what you're scared of. Open up to it. And then add the positive. Add the positive. And if it doesn't feel okay, no, that's all right. It doesn't feel okay, but you just keep doing it. And as you add the positive and you also allow the pain and the suffering and the negative to be there, the negative, if you're not judging, if you're just using your kind attention, the negative dissipates and the positive prevails. Little by little. Little by little. Lawrence.
I went to that Republican convention demonstration too.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that phalanx of police?
Yeah, I had a different reaction. I was there in the afternoon sometime. And, you know, there were a lot of people around, of course, and people were shouting slogans, and there were speeches and all that. And it was kind of, it was inspiring. I liked a lot of the signs, you know, very creative signs. But then I noticed, you know, this, the troopers off to the side, you know. But I didn't have this, first they kind of, you know, with this body armor and stuff, it looked huge. And then the other kind of combination of, what is it, like some of those soldiers in the Wizard of Oz, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't have this kind of fear. I didn't sort of, in my mind, and this wasn't like a Buddhist thing, but I didn't, maybe just obliviousness, but I didn't really have this sort of idea of fear or dichotomizing them, like, a, you know, there's position. I went over to them, and I started talking to some of them, and, you know, it was just sort of kind of average conversation. So it wasn't anything where I, you know, felt real threatened. Now, this was during the day. I understand later in the evening, there were some people that vandalized things and you know, did some damage. And there was some police action. I didn't see any of that. The part I was there was fairly peaceful, but I didn't tend to that.
Well, that's wonderful. You were able just to be there.
Yeah, I don't think it was a Buddhist thing. I wasn't thinking of any of the parameters or any of
the... Well, good. Well, good. If we're able just to be, that's the best thing.
I didn't feel the threat, in other words. It seemed, you know, like they were sort of... I was here, they were there, if I can...
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. These... One, two, okay?
Okay.
Either one. I don't care which first.
Rock, paper, scissors. Okay, so... like two questions ago, you were talking about... not being against the pain and being with it.
Yeah.
Pamela Sjogren talks about even leaning into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I guess it seems like there's another pitfall there of sort of spiritual masochism.
Yeah, well, so there's a pitfall of spiritual masochism, yes. So if you try to turn it into some practice, oh, I'm just going to be with this pain. This is healthy for me. I should be with it. Oh, this is awful. Sometimes, actually, it's not healthy for you to be with it. Sometimes you should be doing something entirely different. So you have to make that call each time. But that's the flip side of what I said, is that sometimes the pain is overbearing, and it's better for us to distract ourselves. You know, we have two kinds of meditation, classical meditation. One is focused meditation, where we focus on our breathing, or we focus on repeating something to ourselves. That allows us to get away from pain, because we're focusing on something that is good. And then we have bare awareness, or panoramic awareness meditation, where we're just with whatever. Those are complement each other. They complement each other. They're both important. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Tentatively.
It seems like the answer is always figure it out for yourself. But
yeah, feel your way along. Feel your way along. Uh-huh. This is the Jiriki school of Buddhism, the self-power school of Buddhism. Feel your way along. And get support from your friends and from the talks and from books and whatever. You're sitting. You're zazen. Yeah.
So this ties into that, but it's just the opposite. How do you know if what you're doing is simply self-indulgent fantasizing about, oh, wouldn't it be great if this came about? Because that's so fun. Oh, now I feel really good. I'm just going to sit with this. But it's not true.
Well, if you know that it's not true, that you're just, it's just a pure fantasy, then you want to be genuine, don't you? I know this is a pure fantasy. It's a pure fantasy that I'm going to be able to play soccer with my grandkids in the way I did with my friends when I was 20 years old. That's a pure fantasy. If I know that, then I can kind of laugh at myself and think I'm gonna modify at 75 years old the way I play soccer with them. Right?
So we're looking at a situation that is rife with all kinds of negativity, and we want to perhaps reframe it. How can we take that energy and put it in a positive way? And there's some juncture there, it seems to me, where that energy can just kind of go off and say, ah, yes, wouldn't it be nice?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then when we did that exercise, I found myself doing that and saying, well, that's not going to happen.
But that's a wouldn't it... That's a wouldn't it be nice. That's not a... I can see it nice, or if you're saying, wouldn't it be nice, that's just in your head. If you're saying, oh, this could be nice, this could happen, I could do this, wouldn't be almost always this fantasy that's not attached to our real psyche. But that's not bad either. To have those kind of fantasies is fine. It's just that if you indulge them too much, it's you waste your energy, you waste your strength.
Stumble a lot.
What'd you say?
I stumble a lot. I think, oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, stumbling, well, we all I stumble a lot, too.
I think, oh, if I did this, it would be great. I concentrate on that.
Yeah, well, we all stumble a lot. But we can't give up hope. And our unconscious, if we plant positive stuff in our unconscious, we have a potential to grow and become more malleable, more flexible, more in love with life as it unfolds. Yeah.
I feel like there's probably a line between...
You've what?
I feel like there's probably a line between knowing genuinely what your ideals and values are and creating a fantasy out of them. Like maybe your ultimate ideal is peace, world peace. You know, this is what I would really like for the world. And maybe that's an internal goal, but a fantasy doesn't need to be created out of it. It can still be genuine without... We can still make steps towards acting in accordance with that ideal without running away with it in a way that's unrealistic.
Thank you. Thank you.